Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to another episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. I'm Dirk, I'm your host. This is weekend 42 approaching. Stay tuned for a repeat of our interview with Josh Hansen of Spanky Stonehearth. We are having a little portrait series here, and we are in fact working on some big things behind the scenes. I want to mention we are releasing a marketplace soon. That's keeping us busy, and we're working really hard on our expo coming in March in Fargo. So we have been busy with a number of things, and we will actually take a small fall break coming up in November also, and run some repeats of our recordings from the past, some that have been really nice, and we felt you can enjoy them one more time. If you haven't heard them yet, you will enjoy them for the first time. And I also a little outlook, we will have a guest next week speak about Halloween stories from Ottertail County. So I'm really excited for that coming up too. So I don't want to keep this much longer. Please also go to our website, lakelifeweekend.com, daily updated, and we are improving it as we speak. And then soon watch out for our marketplace. We hope to have that launching in November. It's actually going to take a little bit more while. So you can hear I'm really excited about that. So there's a lot happening behind the scenes. Feel free to email us to hello@lakelifeweekend.com with any critiques, suggestions, ideas. But I actually don't want to keep this much longer, so please enjoy our interview with Josh Hansen of Spanky's Stonehearth in Vegas. Yeah, welcome to our interview part. I'm here with Josh Hansen, the owner of Spanky's Stonehearth on beautiful Rose Lake. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you, Dirk.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming out this winter weather. We are staying warm. And before we speak about Spanky's, and I know it's a not hidden gem anymore, a well-known anchor to the area in Lakes Country, tell us a little bit about yourself. Are you from the area? Did you grow up on a lake?
Mm-hmm. I grew up in Vergas, Dirk, a population of 287 people when I was born 40 years ago. And I think we have a bustling population of 311 right now.
I know. I think it's growing. I live close by, and I really like Vergas.
I do, too. It's home to me. I grew up here. I went to college for a few years after I graduated high school in Perm, and that didn't work out, so that's what led to the business that is now called Spanky Stonehearth. But I grew up in the Lakes area. I love the Lakes area. I don't see myself ever leaving this area. And one of the big reasons because of that is because of the great natural resource we have in all of the lakes.
Yeah, I agree. How is growing up? I really enjoy Vergas because we have Long Lake. We have a small little community that really works together, bonds together, loony days. So Vergas used to have a high school, but I think you went to high school in Frazee. How is it growing up rural?
Oh, it's great. There's many different opportunities. Obviously, there's benefits and detriments to growing up in a city or a rural area. Personally, I love the style of life that rural life brings, playing outside on a daily basis. It feels safer to me now that I have a child as well. I can see that a little bit more prevalent for sure. I just think that the rural life is a life that even when people do leave, they come back to that lifestyle.
And I see that a lot. I'm a city boy. I grew up with subways and hustle and bustle. Mm-hmm. Now I am in Lakes Country myself for 4 years, and I connect also. I have a son. People know that my son just turned 9 and we play outside. I like it. And I grew up, though, until I was 7, rural kind of myself, building little dams in a creek. And actually, I showed him this winter. So when you were a kid, the four seasons, you played in the you swam, and tell us a little bit about your lake life.
Oh, okay. So we grew up in rural Vergas, off of Highway 130, and we actually had a mink ranch at the time and a fox ranch. My father worked on his father's mink ranch, so we got to go and play at the farm on a daily basis, which was really nice. But before all of my brothers and myself could go swimming or boating or fishing for the day, we would always have to pull a row of weeds in the garden to get to be able to do the things we wanted to that afternoon.
So that was a treat.
That was a treat for us. So we can talk about that a little bit too, but growing up, raising your own garden has many different benefits as well. But yes, each summer we would have a row to hoe or weed in the garden, and then we would have the great treat of having my mom take us down to my great-grandmother's place on Loon Lake. And a couple of my brothers liked to swim, and they did that on a daily basis. One later went to be a lifeguard, and we also had a little boat down there. So I think it was a 1965 model 14-foot Ole Lind Lund boat, and that's what I went fishing in every day. So that was my peacefulness in the summer, being able to go out and fish. I didn't get very far. My mom would never let me row the boat any further than what she could see me.
Which was probably a good thing.
Yeah, a very good thing at the time.
And you're a fisherman.
I am more of a fisherman than a boat person. But I will say we just bought a pontoon, so we're pretty excited about cruising Rose Lake this summer on our new pontoon.
So you make a distinguish between boat and pontoon. To me, both is a boat, but
okay,
maybe not.
Well, I think of a boat as fishing. I think of a pontoon as leisure.
Ah, okay. Well, it makes sense. Yeah, you're right. So you are a water person.
Mm-hmm.
And in the winters, did you snowmobile and all that?
We did a lot of snowmobiling in the winters. The snowmobile trade has definitely evolved since the 1970s when I was first on snowmobiles. Very much so. Nowadays, there's many different opportunities besides snowmobiling in the winter as well. Lots of UTVs. The fish house trade has really picked up too, with a lot. The fish houses are a little more glamorous than they used to be, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
When I used to fish in the winter, we'd have a little 4x6 fish house, and we'd chop the ice with our axe and our pick and our chisel, and we'd have a little wood stove in there without a thermostat, so you'd either be bundled up with all your clothes on, or you'd practically be down to your underwear because it's so darn hot in there.
You know, my picture, I don't know if people remember Grumpy Old Man. Mm-hmm. That was a movie when I was a foreign exchange student 20 years ago, and the fish houses kind of look like that, what you described, or in the movie. I really like that movie, Grumpy Old Man. It's like the true Minnesota movie.
It really is, and I think they did a lot of filming in Wisconsin and Minnesota for that movie.
Well, I hope so. It was a Minnesota story. I don't know. It's not. It's totally always. So nowadays, those ice castles, they are really glamorous, like you just said.
Yeah. They are.
So you are a year-round ambassador, or you embrace Lakes Country, and you live on a lake too, correct?
Yes, I live on Rose Lake. I think I'm fairly fortunate. A lot of people work in the city, and then they come down to play at the lake, for lack of better terms, on weekends or in the summer when they have some vacation. I get to work and play in the lakes area. So I've always felt very fortunate to be able to have that advantage.
I think so too. And I realize that myself. We are connected. We are not connecting. We are constantly connected to nature. And it grounds me. I'm at times maybe a hyper person. And then I love the drive. I really enjoy road trips through Lakes Country that connects and kind of grounds me again.
And there's something soothing about the lakes too. I think we can all attest to the fact that, you know, sitting on the deck watching the sun go down, or the sun rise for that matter, is very, I would say, it gives you a break from the hustle and bustle of everyday life.
Yeah, I agree. So you came to Spanky's early in your life.
Yes. College didn't work out the way I wanted it to, or my advisors for that matter. And I think I bought the restaurant in 2005. I'd went to college for a year and a half and figured that that probably wasn't the best place for me. So took a little risk, and I always knew I wanted to work for myself. From prior experiences, I had great employers, but I also wanted the challenge to build up a restaurant and also some of the luxuries of taking some extra time off when it is slower.
And was it a coincidence? I mean, buying a business isn't that normal so were you working there prior?
I had worked there prior, yes, and had worked at a few other restaurants in the area, a couple up in Fargo Moorhead, a couple in the Cormorant area, and I really enjoyed meeting guests, talking with people. I also like to create dishes in the back. In any industry, and even the restaurant industry more so, I would say, if you ever get complacent, it's probably the wrong place to be, because there's always a new dish to create. There's always something new that you can try on the menu. And I like showcasing that to the guests and seeing the guests' responses. We come from an area when I grew up, when we would have roast beef for Christmas, when it was well done, we'd put it in the oven for another 20 minutes to make sure it was extra well done. But that's just the way we grew up, and I like expanding off of some of the recipes that have been handed down to me throughout the years. And this local scene is really taking off too, so it's nice to support everyone locally, whether it's buying beef or buying vegetables, but having a little bit of a smaller carbon footprint, knowing where all of these items have come from. We've been able to incorporate that into the restaurant on a daily basis, much more in the summer, because the fact of the matter is that we can't really grow a lot of vegetables and such around here in the winter, but
it's
really taking off.
You mentioned just earlier that you picked weeds. You grew up with a garden?
We had a garden, yeah, and everyone around had a garden, and there's this big movement in bigger cities to buy local produce, and we never knew any different when we were younger. That's what we did. That's how we survived. And any thing that was, or any bounty that was left in the fall, then we would can for the winter.
Yeah, so interesting. So before we speak about menu and creative cooking and the ingredients that you use today, so in 2005 you were able to. Was the person retiring? Was the coincidence? Was
the
it
gentleman that I bought the restaurant from, I had worked for a few years and learned a lot from him at that time. And he was looking to move on from the restaurant. And at the time, I thought it was a great opportunity. So we approached each other about it, and it took probably 6 to 8 months to get the transaction done. But I had a lot of support from my family. Obviously, buying a restaurant at any age is a risk. Conventional loans usually don't allow you to, or they don't give you the confidence in lending the money. So,
especially in restaurant hospitality.
For sure. The failure rate is a little higher than most people would want to see, but that was a driving factor for myself as well.
You were really young. You were like 26.
I was 26 when I bought the restaurant. If I would have known then what I know now, maybe I wouldn't have bought it. Oh. No, I'm joking.
So your family, I think your mother helps you.
She's
also
there on a daily basis. She doesn't receive any compensation, but I think she's just looking out for her son more so than anything.
Oh, she wants to make sure that you stay out of trouble.
Right. She's not on the payroll, but she's there on a daily basis.
Yeah, I've seen her there before. So it's a family-owned business in a way, right?
Very much so. All of my brothers have worked there in the past and still continue to work there randomly as we need them throughout the seasons.
How many brothers do you have?
Three.
Okay.
Four brothers, actually, and two sisters.
Really?
So a big extended family.
And they're all local?
All local, yes.
They all stayed? And, and
within the area. My brother that lives the furthest away is Nathan. He lives in the Minneapolis area.
Okay, so you're all still Minnesotans.
Right.
Okay, interesting. And I think most people know of Spanky's or have been there. So how big is it? Like, how many people does it seat? And some statistics, maybe.
Oh, sure. So there's a lounge portion of the restaurant, and then there's also the dining room portion. The lounge seats about 70 to 80 people, and the dining room can seat right around 100. And just above the dining room, there's a loft area that's a little more private. Seating capacity up there is about 16 to 20 people. And then in the summer, we're fortunate enough to use the deck.
I love the deck.
Yes.
The views.
View of the lake. Yeah. Who doesn't like overlooking a lake, having a meal at the lake?
Yes. No, so it's a big operation. How many people does it take to, like, how many employees
do you have? At one time, when we were running the catering, which we just recently sold to some great employees, we had over 100 employees at that time.
Really?
And now we're down to about 40 in the winter and about 70 in the summer. Now, that sounds like a lot. The majority of those people are part-time, but as far as full-time employees, we have about 20 right now.
Wow. So how many in the kitchen?
On a busy night in the summer, we'll have 8 cooks on the line. This time of year, which is January, we'll have about 6 cooks on the line on a busy weekend. Typically on a weeknight, we'll have between 3 and 5 cooks.
Wow. And how much do you experiment? Do you get time to create?
Oh, daily. This is the best time of year to experiment because it is a little slower, because most of the people that enjoy the lake life in the summer are working so they can come down in the summertime. So we really get to be creative this time of year. I challenge the chefs on a daily basis to come up with new recipes. And you have to remember, they don't all work. So we get to try them out beforehand in the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
and tweak them as we may and make some adjustments. And it's kind of nice. We do this on a daily basis, like I mentioned, and the cooks get to know each other better. We get to know the chefs' weaknesses and their talents and focus on the talents that they do have and expand them as well. So it's somewhat of a school on a daily basis too.
Interesting.
It's not just cooking for the guests that come in between 5 o'clock and 10 o'clock at night. There's a lot more that goes into it, anywhere from 8 a.m. when the first prep cooks show up until, you know, midnight when the last chef leaves for the night and does his order. And
I was going to say, I worked in a kitchen once in my lifetime, and it sounds really appealing and fun, but it's very hard work, and it's in the morning and then a break and then all night.
Right, and lots of weekends and lots of holidays, so I have to give my wife credit for putting up with my schedule.
Yeah, I bet. So we learned we have a big operation. We have creative, we have new items on the menu in the summer. Every week or every month?
Oh, on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, we have our mainstay menu items that people continue to order year in and year out. But with this creativity that we've created in the kitchen, we're able to run features each night, too.
Okay.
And a lot of those features are items that you wouldn't find on another menu around here. They've come from the inspiration in the kitchen. So we're a little more compelled to sell those items. We let the servers try most of those items each night so they know what they're selling to the guests too.
Sure.
And the response is just phenomenal. Personally, when I go out to eat, I like to try something new that maybe isn't on the daily menu.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the chefs really get a joy out of being able to see something they've created in the back and what it does to the guests by the guests coming back in the kitchen and letting them know how great their meal was.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives the kitchen staff a lot of pleasure and also gives them a little more motivation to continue on doing what they are doing.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm getting hungry here. Tell me a little bit more. Tell us about the ingredients. You mentioned local produce.
Sure.
And
yeah, and I think the guest has to realize that we'll source as much local produce as we can. When it's out, it's out.
Yeah.
For that week or for that day, for that matter. So the guest has to have a little bit of an open mind when we're advertising these features, because they might we might end up with 30 tomatoes and we'll do a caprese salad. And when we're out of those tomatoes, we're going to take it off the menu because we feel that we don't want to sell any other tomatoes at that time of year if they're not local.
So you try to get all your produce, so all the vegetables?
In the summertime, yes. We work with many different vendors in the area. And if anyone's listening, we're also open to more vendors as well.
Okay.
Usually by the middle of April, we have fresh produce with the vendors that we work with, the high tunnels, and right through the summer and into the fall with the root vegetables. And we still have some root vegetables on site at the restaurant that we're using from a lot of the local suppliers.
So that means, obviously, as you know, I'm from Germany, and we have many small restaurants and always seasonal kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So you just mentioned, and I'm not a chef by any means, but you just mentioned roots and that clicked, and then the other produce. So you do offer sides and seasonal dishes.
Oh, certainly.
Correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right now we're featuring some lamb from Solon Farms in Vergas, and our chefs have been able to take the lamb from the field right to the restaurant and have been able to utilize all the different cuts on the lamb and have had great success selling it at the restaurant.
And also the sides, right?
Right.
Okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. So right now, I know we have no mussels here, but I remember in Germany, it's like always the month with an R at the end, January, on December, like with an R, December, November, January, that's mussel month. So in the restaurants, you always see mussel advertisements when they're harvested.
Certainly.
And then asparagus. I know asparagus is a year-round product here, and you have green asparagus, but we have white asparagus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only, I think, harvested May or June, and it's just like 2 months. That's it. And then there's no asparagus anymore.
Right. And it creates a novelty as well, instead of offering it on a year-round basis and sometimes leaving the quality subject to the produce that shows up off of the truck. And we're not going to necessarily do that. So if we don't feel the quality is there, we'll just say asparagus is on the menu, and if it comes in on the truck, we're going to, and if we don't like the quality of it, then we'll let our guests know that we're not going to be serving it that night.
What's your favorite ingredient and your favorite dish?
Oh boy, that's a loaded question. If I had a last meal.
I love your potato mash with the bacon bits.
Sure.
And the sour cream, sour kraut. And actually, I like really those in the gorgonzola sauce, those little meat.
Oh, the chislik.
Oh, I just love
it.
I usually just, yeah, anyways. But what is your most, what do you prepare? What do you like to prepare the most?
Personally, I like to cook steaks.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get all the meat in on the bone, and we further process it from there at the restaurant. And then we do our own aging too, and I think that's key to why our steaks are so sought after, I should say. We also do all of our steaks and our ribs on charcoal. That adds a wonderful, unique flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to doing it on
gas. Yeah,
correct.
I have a charcoal grill at home too. I don't do gas.
And it's a little more of an art doing steaks on charcoal, because there's not an even heat, so you have to constantly be watching it.
Yeah.
So that keeps me out of trouble, though.
Yeah. Yeah, so you like the steak on the
grill? I like steaks. Fresh seafood, you can't go wrong with that. We have a program at the restaurant where we get fresh seafood in 3 or 4 times weekly, mainly from Hawaii. We source some fish from California and Florida as well, but majority of our fish come from Hawaii, our fresh fish.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. But everyone, I shouldn't say everyone, the majority of fish that are still sold at the restaurant are walleyes.
Yeah, and they are from Minnesota?
And that's the Minnesota lake fish.
Yeah, I know that. But like your walleye.
Our walleye does come from Minnesota, yes.
Okay, good. So as local as possible.
Yeah, it comes up from Red Lake, which is a couple hours north of the restaurant.
Yeah. Okay, so we learned that you take pride in local produce.
Definitely. And we also like to think that we're helping the suppliers as well.
By supporting their operations?
Obviously, there's some things we do have to buy that we cannot get locally, but when it comes down to it, we try to support as much locally grown products as we can.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's great. It's a community, not service, but you can feel that by using the local farmers, you're supporting. It's a support.
Yeah.
It's a circle in the end.
And it becomes a community.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're all helping each other.
Exactly.
And the end product is significantly better than what you could get if you were buying off of a truck.
Yeah. No. And do you have a farm where you raise your own cattle?
We work, personally not myself, but we work with a few farmers in the area. We're currently working with Jacobson Farms in Hitterdal, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And Jacobson Red Angus is the name of the operation. and they're doing a fantastic job.
Okay. And you own some cattle, though?
Right now, I don't own any cattle. Okay. No. We found out that it worked better to have the ranchers raise the cattle and then us to sell the cattle.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I was just curious. Mm-hmm. I really like cattle, and I want to have a cattle farm, but don't ask me why. I just think it's fascinating. So this winter, what have you been up to? Have you been out snowmobiling yet?
We've been doing some ice fishing, actually.
Oh, really?
It's been too darn cold to snowmobile for myself, but I'm probably a fair-weather snowmobiler, too. We do a lot of ice fishing in the winter. We also get some satisfaction of pulling a 20-inch walleye through the hole. And
did you get one?
I've caught a few this winter.
Really?
Yes.
And you eat them then?
Certainly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Yeah, yeah. Are they different in the winter? Is there a different in taste, you think?
I think the taste is still the same. Okay. The texture might be a little better. They're a little more firm because of the water
cold
temperature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So 20-inch.
That's a good-sized walleye.
Yeah, yeah. That you feeds pictures?
I do. I'll even tell you the lake I caught it on.
Yeah, I bet it was Rose
maybe
Lake.
Not.
No, maybe not. Okay. Yeah, no, I haven't been out ice fishing yet, but I see a lot of people. I'm always scared to walk on the ice for some reason. I don't know.
So many people come down to the lake in the summertime, obviously, to boat, to fish, to spend leisure time on the lake. I think the wintertime is just as much fun. You might have to use a little more imagination, but there's snowmobiling, there's downhill skiing, there's cross-country skiing, there's fishing, and then just being outside in the winter. Some days aren't conducive to letting that happen because of the wind chill and the temperature, but overall, winter is a fantastic time to take advantage of outside in Minnesota, on the lakes.
I agree, and I like the pictures that you see when you're out with the white. And I must say, we have a couple of days of wind and storm maybe, but the majority of the days are blue sky, mm-hmm, and sun, and I really like the time. Everything is a little slower, everything is a little bit calmer, cozy, and yeah, I enjoy the winter the same, yeah. And we were walking actually yesterday, Harry and I walked on the lake and went to the little island of ours here on Lake Seven, and just super cute. I just like that walk.
Oh,
and,
sure.
It's just fantastic. I don't own a snowmobile yet. Maybe someday, still dreaming about that. But yeah. Well, I'm excited to visit you again in the restaurant, try some new items on the menu.
Oh, that'd be great, Dirk. We appreciate you coming out.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming to us today. And you have a good weekend ahead.
Okay, thank you, Dirk, and enjoy your winter, everyone.
Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.